Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Blue Jays Happy Hour, episode 30. We are back briefly in the midst of all of the lockout nonsense. We've been sporadic here, but we thought we would come back to give you a good old year in review. And, you know, we think of baseball being such a summer thing. We don't think of it in terms of calendar years as much, but a lot has happened for the Blue Jays in 2021. Like, even if we're going to run through chronologically, but you start in January, you head to the end of the year. Like, lots of stuff happened both before and after the 2021 season, which was a hell of a season in and of itself. Like, what is, I don't know, before we kind of dive into it, Stone, what is sort of your takeaway of Blue Jays in 2022? Like, January 1st, 2022, what are you going to think about the Blue Jays that you maybe didn't think January 1st, 2021?
Well, that they're definitely contenders, I guess. I mean, I kind of thought that, I presumed that they would be, and they were moving towards that direction a year ago. But I mean, I think it's really cemented now. You know, the way that they are viewing themselves and the way that the front office and the ownership is viewing this team, which is good. You know, I think there was still some uncertainty. You know, a year ago they had Ryu. They didn't yet have Springer. And they didn't yet have that breakout from Vlad and you know, a nice year from Bo and all that. And it was very much sort of more theoretical. And now I think it's a lot more concrete that this is a team that's going to be very good for a long time.
Yeah, and I think coming into 2021, there was a notion that, you know, maybe this was sort of a dip year or a bridge year. You know, 2020, obviously bizarre season. You know, the Blue Jays made that expanded playoffs. That wasn't a great team, the 2020 Blue Jays. You know, they were kind of fun in their own way, and it was sort of the Teoscar Hernandez coming out party. Like, there were aspects of it to embrace. But if the Blue Jays had said, you know what, you know, we're going to kind of use 2021 to build ourselves up, no one would have been happy about that. They wanted to see those big additions, but it wouldn't have been out of the realm of possibility that 2021 was going to be this year where you kind of consolidated and saw what you had in the young players and then maybe made a move at the deadline if you were in it. But, and we're going, I guess we can just kind of get into it right away, they hit the ground running in January. I mean, they made all these signings. You know, Tyler Chatwood, I believe, was the first one, so that's when you knew that they were on the road to contention. And then they had Kirby Yates. So yeah, they really started hot in January. But, you know, that was the first $8.5 million of the over $400 million they would end up giving out in 2021. And obviously the big domino is George Springer. And, you know, we saw Ryu, so we knew that they had flipped the switch a little bit. But there's always those excuses you could have around Ryu. Like, he had an injury history and they kind of gave him the other year, and, you know, he was a Korean pitcher, so maybe he was more willing to come to Canada than some other players would be. And then with George Springer, you have, you know, an American guy who's by many people's reckoning the best free agent available coming to the Toronto Blue Jays, and that was something totally new for this era of Blue Jays baseball.
Yeah, and a guy, you know, there was, as I'm sure people will recall, there was all that talk about the Mets, and he's from Connecticut, and that's, you know, closer than Toronto to there, and you know, the Mets, obviously, for obvious reasons, I think he made the right choice in not going to that tire fire. of a franchise. But yeah, that was definitely a shift. And even, you know, we could even see, you know, with a year's perspective, and obviously Ryu was already under contract a year ago, but, you know, that's an $80 million deal that, you know, that doesn't seem that huge at this point. And maybe we weren't thinking about it that way, but the Springer deal, you know, 6 years, $150 million, is still real significant. And obviously, you know, to have that come through was game changing, I think, for them. Even though on the field, you know, he was great when he played, but he only played half a year. But you know, yeah, I think that definitely, as I was saying before, sort of just solidified, you know, what they are and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and the other aspect of it, like, he was always a fit because no one liked the idea of Randall Grichuk in center field over the long term. But he wasn't sort of this crying need the same way that Ryu was. Like, when they signed Ryu, like, they needed a pitcher. They really needed someone at the front of that rotation. And when they signed Springer, it felt like more that they wanted him and that they wanted to push things forward. And that's what that... And like you said, you know, he ultimately played less than half the games of the season. He was really good for most of it. He played hurt and wasn't very effective for some of it as well. But, you know, a few days later, they're signing Marcus Semien, way more consequential to what ended up being the 2021 Blue Jays. However, signing Springer meant a lot more. And, I mean, we'll see how much more it means over the next years of that contract. But signing Semien was the sort of move that they would have done in the past. And it worked out better than you could possibly imagine. And it was a fantastic idea to go out and get him. And the impact can't be overstated. But the signing of Springer was a much bigger, I mean, obviously more years, more money, but it was a little bit of a paradigm shift, whereas the Semien signing was more like really good business that went as well as you could imagine. Same with the Ray thing. Like, when they re-signed Ray on a 1 year deal to rebuild his value, that's the sort of thing they would have done in the past. It just happened to work out insanely well.
Yeah. And I think that's been an interesting sort of frame to view this off season through so far, you know, even though it's obviously on pause. Because the, you know, those kind of moves are out there where it's like, all right, well, we'll take a flyer on this. I mean, $18 million is quite a flyer for Marcus Semien, but you know, there are guys out there, you know, I wrote about in a piece today, like Jeff McNeil of the Mets is potentially being dangled in trades. And there's an interesting lefty bat for the infield, you know, who had a bad year and has some red flags in his profile. And there are a few guys around, you know, Kyle Seager, who just retired, was another guy who, you know, was a league average hitter, still plays good defense. You know, had he not retired, was a guy that definitely people would be looking for the Jays as, you know, maybe a reclamation project. And they're certainly, you know, they're certainly past that. And last year, you know, a year ago in January, they were sort of straddling that line where it's like, okay, we're signing Springer, but also, you know, it's easy to forget now, but like Semien was coming off a bad year. And even though it was, you know, just a 60 game year, so the year is definitely in pretty large quotation marks. And he had the playoffs that were good. And there were reasons to think, you know, things would work out as well as they did, but it worked out spectacularly well, obviously. But that was definitely a move that, like you say, the old Blue Jays would make, and a team that is not as fully turned towards, you know, pushing that window of contention as wide open as they possibly can might make. And you feel it a bit this year, I think, this winter, because, you know, the moves are going to have to continue to be bold and big.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the idea of losing Ray and Semien is something that we went into the offseason at least expecting to lose one, and, you know, probably to lose both. The team was never going to just let those holes linger. Like, you can't necessarily totally replace that, and whoever comes into the infield probably won't be as good as Semien. We've said that before. But it's not like the team was going to let those guys go and just add nothing there. And, you know, it would be pretty shocking if they don't get an infielder and they got Gausman. And that just shows where they're at, where it's they don't say, oh, 2021 was this magical year where we hit on some guys. Well, we're just going to have to march ahead and kind of do our thing. They said, okay, this was a high level of success. Obviously, they didn't make the playoffs, and we'll get to that. But we're going to do whatever we can, like you said, to push that window of contention forward. So February is one of those months of the 12. We're going to go, some of these months we're going to have a lot to talk about, and some of them are going to go like that. February is one of those months. So February, The Blue Jays started the Joel Piamps dance with the Red Sox that would continue for weeks and weeks and weeks. They ultimately got their man, and that was somewhat good for a bit. They added Travis Bergen, Joe Panik, who would later be important, but not for anything he did on the field. David Phelps, Tommy Malone. There's a guy you kind of forget that made a start for the Blue Jays at one point last year.
Was it just one?
It might have been a couple.
I don't remember, but I tried to put that out of my mind. But yeah, definitely a guy who, on your trivia lists of if you're trying to bring up 2021 Blue Jays, might be forgotten.
Francisco Liriano, that was an interesting one, just because I feel like there was so much. I mean, hype would be an exaggeration, right? We're talking about end of the bullpen type guy. But there was a lot of chatter that, like, oh, here's another lefty who could make an impact. And they have the familiarity with him, and they like him, and he's got the big slider, and he can handle lefties, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And just nothing came of that. And really, that's February. Like, there really wasn't anything. That's about it. Which I guess, that's kind of what you expect of February, is that you add some of those finishing depth pieces. The offseason has kind of been pushed back a little bit in recent years, although this year's a different case for obvious reasons. So sometimes you see guys hitting in February, but this is sort of what you expect. March is interesting because there was a lot of spring training stuff that ended up being meaningful. Like, every year we're so thirsty for baseball to come back. We want things to matter that happen in spring training. We get excited about them. We want to write about the player who's going to be coming out of nowhere to be a huge hit, or the prospect who's looking great and might come up middle of the season. And, more often than not, it's bullshit, to be honest. Because they're playing shitty players on the other side. Like, it's really hard to scout the quality of competition and how much those players care. And those players might be trying to throw you a million curveballs because that's what they're working on. Like, it's a very weird thing. And yet, for the Blue Jays, Vladdy was incredible in spring. And there was the whole, body transformation component to that. So that seemed to be based in something a little bit more than him having a few hot at-bats in Florida. Robbie Ray was really good in spring and then had that little extra velocity. Steven Matz was really good in spring as well. So it seemed like kind of the Blue Jays spring storyline guys, those guys carried over to the regular season. Largely, like Josh Palacios and Riley Adams, didn't end up being great. Espinal was good in spring. He was good in the season. Like, the guys who sucked in the spring, Danny Jansen, George Springer, that didn't really carry over. But it's more than you normally get. Like, more often than not, you can really flip a coin whether spring stuff is meaningful, if that. And in this case for the Blue Jays, it seemed like kind of the majority of the stuff you saw had some bearing on the season to come.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, obviously the big ones are Ray and Vladdy and Matz. But yeah, the Vlad thing, clearly... the physical transformation, and that's something that we will probably continue to talk about for a while. I don't know for how long we sort of feel that that's necessary to talk about. Hopefully he just continues to look great and hit great. But that was obviously a thing, and it's easy to forget now that the 2020 that he had wasn't great, and the 2019 he had wasn't great. And was fine, especially for, 19, 20 year old in the big leagues, but also was not, didn't live up to the hype, which was almost impossible to do. And yet, in 2021, he did live up to the hype, and seeing that and seeing him, not put the ball on the ground nearly as much was definitely an encouraging thing. And Matz and Ray, I don't know if we were, thinking about them as, who's going to start in a playoff series at that point, but obviously that was like really indicative of what a well-oiled machine the Jays, pitching development kind of apparatus is, and Pete Walker is the head of that spear and identifying things that could really help guys, and you could see them sort of right away. And I think, those were good examples of, or those are like Robbie Ray being able to locate his fastball, or locate literally anything compared to where he was the previous season. That's something that I think you can take away from spring. And I think, like I say, with the Vladdy and not hitting the ball on the ground as much, those are sort of more, they're not like sort of traditional spring storylines, but I think those are sort of like the granular things that you can see in spring and be like, okay, maybe this does, you know, maybe this is something that can endure, more so than just like looking at the stat line, you know, in the overall.
Yeah, I think if Vladdy hadn't lost all that weight, then we wouldn't have put our hopes too much into that spring results, right? It would have been like, oh, he's got a hot spring. Hopefully he can keep it going. I think, you know, if he had never lost any of that weight, we probably would have expected him to have a strong season. We would have expected him to take a step forward just kind of based on his age and his history and whatnot. However, you know, there's a difference between a step forward from where he was in 2020 and being a credible MVP candidate, right? So that was a big part of that story arc. With Ray, it was interesting too, because a lot of it was velocity. I mean, we always think of Ray as a guy who throws hard because he's had all these strikeouts, and he throws relatively hard for a lefty, but he had a pretty big jump, especially in spring training. Like, it seems like he was really hammering those 95, 96 mile an hour fastballs. And that's a big deal for a guy like him, and we've talked about this quite a few times, who just sort of pounds the strike zone and has way more control and command. And that's, I think, a little bit of an underrated part of the Ray story, is that because he had a little bit of a velocity boost, he had that margin for error when he was filling the zone with fastballs that weren't necessarily in the best spots. And when those are 95, 96, as opposed to, you know, 93, 94, that can make a pretty big difference. And that's what we were starting to see. And in spring training, you know, I'm kind of obsessed with pitcher stuff, probably more than results, to my detriment at times, and that's how I get fall in love with Anthony Castro. but in spring, that's kind of what you look at, because, you know, it's small sample and it's weird, you know, it's weird competition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you really kind of zero in on the stuff, and it did seem that Ray had this stuff boost. The thing with him is like, okay, cool. Is he ever going to throw strikes consistently? And that was a valid question before, but he, you know, he answered it pretty quickly. Yeah, relatively quickly on and into April. And so we'll start in April here, as, you know, we promised chronological order, no need to jump around. So they had a 12-12 record in April. One thing I'm going to say as we go through these months, I think there's this notion, to be fair, months are sort of arbitrary cutoffs. I understand that, but there's sort of a notion that the Blue Jays had this up and down type of season, and they really did have, you know, a huge surge at the end there, but they were pretty consistent, not in a great way, but they were pretty consistent in the first months of the season. Like, they really did hover, they didn't have a disaster month. They kind of hovered around 500, just above. I don't think they fell below 500 in any month. April was their worst at 12-12. They were kind of consistently fine for much of the season, but I didn't really feel that way. I think, you know, we'll talk about sort of what was going well and what was going poorly. And, you know, it didn't seem like things were clicking at the same time. So it's understandable that there was this sort of inconsistent feel around the team, but the results themselves were somewhat inconsistent, somewhat consistent. So April is really when we see the Vladdy mega season beginning. Like, he's truly awesome out of the gate, close to 500 OBP, you know, the best hitter in the league. One thing we forget is that Semien was bad. Like, in April, Semien was not good. And it was the stuff that he ended up doing well. It didn't look good at the time. Like, it looked like he was yanking everything. It looked like he was trying too hard to get the ball in the air. We were thinking, you know, he's almost kind of hitting like a guy who maybe thinks he has more power than he has. I remember thinking that watching him. I wasn't panicking because he was playing great defense and, you know, the track record was there, etc. But he really, you know, in that first month of April, he slashed 211, 290, 368, often from the top of the lineup. Like, that's really bad. And then the Springer, waiting for Springer to arrive, was the other sort of big thing in the lineup. He played the last two games of April as a DH, didn't really do anything. One thing we forget with the pitch, I think in the pitching in April, one thing we'll remember is Merriweather. Like, he looked like this top flight, totally unhittable closer, throwing close to 100, multiple secondary pitches that looked good. Like, it was, and he looked good at times in 2020, but he looked incredible. And I think we're talking about four games here, to be honest.
Yeah.
But he looked like a guy who could be a huge difference maker. You know, we talked about it. You never put faith in Julian Merriweather for reasons that are not his fault. But that was really, that really stood out. Robbie Ray stood out as well. Matt's got off to a good start. But Ryu was actually their best pitcher in April. And I kind of, I kind of forget that Ryu had some pretty good stretches during the season. Like, he had a 2.60 ERA. He led the team in WAR. He walked less than a batter per nine. Like, he looked really sharp out of the gate. Like, he very much looked like that ace that the Blue Jays had in 2020. So then what we really had is a rotation where beyond Ryu, Mats, and Ray, everything else was garbage. Like, TJ Zoik, Tanner Roark, Trent Thornton, openers, like, anything that wasn't those three guys was terrible. Zoik is just, I don't know, I couldn't stand it, to be honest, at the start of the season when people were trying to say that, like, oh, he's throwing a little bit harder, oh, we're trying some stuff with him. I'm like, I never believed that a guy who can't strike anyone out at AAA has potential to be a starter in the MLB. Like, unless you've got some insane arm angle or, like, crazy movement on some kind of... And he has a sinker. It had above average movement, but not to a crazy degree. And they just seem to be pushing Zoik as a guy who could help. And I never found myself believing it for a second.
Yeah. He's in the Jacob Wagusback sort of category. And God love TJ Zoik, I guess. I don't know. But there's definitely a tier of guys that the Jays had collected over the previous several years. I'm thinking, like, Thomas Pannone was there for a bit, and Trent Thornton is sort of backsliding into that as well. Maybe Anthony Kay, of guys who, they didn't have AAA depth for a long time, and then they got it, and then you saw it a little too often in the big leagues, as you did with Tanner Roark. I mean, did he make it through April? I'm looking at your notes here. I don't know if he comes up again, but
no, he does not. It's interesting with Roark, because I think with baseball, people can have just bad years. Like, some people at times, like, serviceable or even good players can have just bad years, especially 2020. It's a weird situation. But it was so clear through 2020 that he was just busted, that he had nothing to offer. His stuff had just, his stuff had always been, not always been fringy, but kind of later in his 30s, or not his late 30s, but later in his career, into his 30s, it had started to get pretty fringy, and it just fell off a cliff in 2020. And I understand why they're paying him a decent amount of money. He has a track record. Let's see if he can bounce back. But one thing I respect is that they cut bait with him pretty quickly. He came back, he was throwing the same garbage, and they were like, this is not going to work. See you later, Roark. And they washed their hands of him. And that was a really good call, because being patient with them only would have cost them, a couple more games probably.
True, yeah. I mean, the sooner Alek Manoah got up, the better, obviously.
Yeah, well, that's the big May story. Also, it would be foolish of me not to mention Blue Jays Happy Hour launches April 2021. I believe it was the last day of April. It was a late start. That's fine. So then we get to May, and it's 15-13 again, kind of okay. It's a 25 plus run differential, so we're starting to get that pattern where they're maybe playing better than their record indicates. But at the end of May, they're 5.5 out of the division and 1.5 out of the wild card. Now, that's not out of the picture by any means, but that's falling behind. Ryu is really good again. Ray had a rough month, 4.60 ERA, 5.39 FIP. I don't really remember reaching an inflection point where I was doubting if Ray was a thing, but I guess I kind of did, because we talked about it with, when we had Ben Nicholson Smith on, we did the over unders. We had an over under about Ray's walks that ended up being way, way, way off. And it was around that time. So I guess there was some faltering by Ray. Stripling is kind of locking down a rotation spot at this point. Manoah, we joke a lot about how when we started this podcast, it was all Manoah talk all the time. And that's really what it was. And it's because in this time, the Blue Jays needed a pitcher badly. His level of dominance at AAA was in very limited action, was incredible. And so on May 24th, this is kind of the big moment in May, is Alek Manoah making his MLB debut against the Yankees. 6 innings, 2 hits, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, no runs against, 88 pitches and 60 strikes, which seems kind of important. One, efficiency, and second, strike throwing, when both of those things had been a question. Like, he just looked like everything you possibly could imagine. Like, he'd just kind of come out of AAA and been plopped in the major leagues. Now, we saw that wasn't ultimately the way it was going to be all the time, despite the fact he had a great rookie season, but it really was one of those times where someone is billed as being this big deal and they arrive and they absolutely look the part. And that is one of my biggest memories of the 2021 season, is that first start by Manoah, especially because we had sort of invested so much time and mental bandwidth in this guy. But it was,
and he had his mom on TV, which was a nice moment. Like, she was, you know, going nuts for it, and yeah. But you know, people poring over grainy AAA broadcasts and just getting incredibly enthused about what he was able to do, because he sort of teased it in spring as well, right? Which was also the big thing that also against the Yankees, as he made the debut against. But there were a couple outings in spring where it was just like, okay, this is different than what we expected. You know, we'd always kind of, he'd been a top 10 prospect guy. Obviously, he was, you know, a first round pick, good, you know, an excellent arm out of the draft. But it was definitely very fast that he made his way into the conversation of like, call him up. But clearly, just something, you know, he'd shifted gears and was a different guy than a lot of pitching prospects are. You know, as to, you know, the contrast always, maybe forever, is going to be with Nate Pearson, who, you know, has, you know, higher octane stuff and throws harder and everything, but just has not been able to stay healthy and not been able to you know, keep guys off the bases, and I think that's obviously something that Manoah did very well and did very quickly in a way that is probably detrimental to other pitching prospects, because it doesn't come that easily for most.
Yeah, and Nate Pearson did make his debut for the season in May as well, and he got rocked in a 2-inning start, and he walked everybody, and it was weird. It seemed like they kind of reached for him out of desperation, and the timing wasn't quite right, and they were sort of hoping that he'd hit the ground running, and he did the exact opposite of that. And that's when we started, like you said, making that contrast. I remember we had a discussion, like, if you could only have Manoah Pearson right now, who would you have? And I think you said Manoah, and I was still a little bit cautious, and I said Pearson. But it's funny because, you know, by the end of this season, like, that's a laughable question. You know, like, we're here in December, 7 months later. In theory, not that much baseball has been played. But based on Pearson's health and Manoah's remarkable success, like, they're not even close. Like, there's plenty of tiers of value between Nate Pearson and Alek Manoah if you were going to go on the trade market or however you want to measure that. Like, the gap is pretty significant. That's not to say that there's a world where Pearson comes back and becomes everything you want him to be. But like we say, the door on that is closing, and the sliver of light there is getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And if you want to bet on a guy, betting on the guy who was extremely successful in his rookie season seems like the better way to go. That's for sure.
For sure. And also, I think some of, you know, this is sort of why I think we sort of missed that Ray had a rough month, is because there was a disaster at the back end of the rotation at this stage.
Yeah, he, you know, 4.60 ERA wasn't so bad compared to some of the other stuff that was going on. That's for sure. In terms of hitting, you know, Vladdy kept going, not quite at the same pace, but at a pace where, you know, it wasn't a hot streak anymore. It was a hot start. Semien took off. So that's when we first, you know, he had a 200 WRC plus in May. He kind of never really looked back from that point. George Springer had that May 1st game where he hit two home runs. One of them was 470 feet, I believe. It was like the second or third longest home run in Blue Jays Statcaster history. And he basically won that game for the Blue Jays. And it was sort of, okay, this is, you know, we've waited and like it's been a rough start. And he looked a little tentative in the first couple games. But okay, this is George Springer. If, you know, that's not how it played out. But there was that moment where we thought, oh, okay, George Springer has 100% arrived. This is what this lineup can be. Everything is right in the world, and he played one more game and then he left due to fatigue or whatever they said at the time. That was very stupid. He was clearly injured and he didn't play again until June 22nd. Like, that was a very odd saga, and I don't think you or I are really the type of people who have too much indignation about, like, we were lied to and blah blah blah. Like, part of it is sort of the nature and, like, you know, the cost of doing business, and sometimes the information they have isn't perfect and they don't want to put the wrong stuff out there. But that seemed like a case where they just made a few unforced errors in terms of the way they communicated that because it was clear to anyone who was watching that game that he was not coming out of the game due to fatigue. I don't know if the fatigue was exactly the words they used, but he was clearly hurt. And it's, you know, it's okay to say if somebody's hurt, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Buck and Dan or Buck and Pat on the broadcast, but like it was just, you know, anyone watching on TV, which, you know, because of the nature of the season was pretty much literally everybody, heard them talking about, you know, they're just showing replays and slowed down of him clutching at his hamstring or whatever part of his leg that was hurt. I think it was the hamstring. And, you know, and pulling up and then being taken out from the game. And so it was definitely an unforced error, as you say, not their finest moment when they're like, oh, no, he was just fatigued and he'll be back in a couple of days. And then the couple of days turned into a couple more days. And it was a bit ridiculous. And it's all that is a shame because, you know, I mean, Charlie Montoya was starting at such a point of where he can't win from so many people already that stuff like that is just only making matters worse and making it, you know, making my life worse because I have to sift through the discourse about Charlie Montoya, you know, every summer, forever and ever, apparently.
I mean, the degree to which you sift is somewhat within your control.
True, for true, the true. But it's
you do have to do some sifting.
I don't know. It's to me, it's like, just get on board for fuck's sake. like this is the manager. Are you gonna really spend the next however many years he's here just crying about how you don't like him and think he's losing games? Like, just find reasons, find the positive in the situation because it's not changing. Please, for the love of God, people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way that situation changes is basically if things go sour enough that, you know, a Ross Atkins, a Mark Shapiro feels like, you know, like, why do managers ever fire? I mean, why do general managers ever fire managers? It's because their job security is starting to feel under threat and they need another card to play. And the Blue Jays front office is so far away from that. At this point, like, they're really have been embraced by ownership that they're not going to feel the need to make a move in that area unless things go downhill in an incredibly profound way that probably isn't worth contemplating right now.
Fair, yeah.
Okay, June. We're almost halfway there. It's another month, 14 and 12. This is kind of what the Blue Jays were, like, even though they felt better than that. Run differential was better, plus 27. By the end of June, they're 8.5 out of their division, 5.5 out of the wild card. So that's really danger zone area where, like, you're a bad stretch away from being kind of permanently out of it. This was Vladdy's best month, 220 WRC plus, 10 home runs. Reese McGuire was good. I don't think we need to, you know, dwell on that, but like he really sort of held down the catcher spot when they were having problems. George Springer returns to center field. That felt big. The fact that when he was ready to return, he returned to center field, not DH. I think that kind of, and he made a couple of relatively decent plays sort of in his early games too. The bullpen was such a big problem. Merriweather is gone. Chatwood, Trent Thornton, who had Montoya's trust to like a bizarre degree throughout the year, Anthony Castro, all those guys are imploding. This was probably the low light for, and that helps explain how you have a plus 27 run differential and you're 14 and 12. And this is when the Blue Jays start to make moves and address it, right? So they got Jacob Barnes from the Mets. That didn't really turn out into, it looked okay actually at the beginning. Barnes had a few good outings. He had that cutter. He thought maybe he could do something, but he could not. He could not. Adam Simber. This is the trade that will continue to be bizarre. I know it's about eating the money and it's about Miami being cheap, but Miami would then this offseason go on to spend money, so I don't know what the hell they're doing. Adam Simber through 2023, so 2.5 years of him, plus a fairly useful Corey Dickerson, who was injured at the time, for Joe Panik. Like, I don't even know why Miami would have taken on, I don't know what their utility infielder situation was at the time, but the idea of taking on Panik doesn't make sense. He's probably really just money going back the other way. And then Andrew McInvale, who is sort of a nothing prospect. Like, this is, you know, Simber was really good off the top. He was pretty good for the vast majority of the season. He's going to be a big part of the bullpen in 2022 and probably 2023 as well. Like,
yeah, he's got a ton of control still left.
Yeah. Like, he's not, I mean, it's hard to say someone's a steal when they're kind of a complimentary piece, but he's a pretty good complimentary piece. And the Blue Jays got him for absolutely nothing. You know, what else is going on? And the starters, Ray's looking good again. He's bounced back from May. So now we're kind of getting a more complete picture of, okay, he's having this big year. Stripling was great. Also, this is another thing that was a little bit weird for a second. There was a lot of sort of Pete Walker talk. Oh, this guy has, you know, he's fixed his mechanics. He's figured it out. And remember when he was an all-star? He was good in Los Angeles. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, all that discourse came back. And I'm not being dismissive of it because I'm sure I probably participated to some degree. I can't remember to which degree, but I probably said some things that don't sound good now. But he had a great stretch. The wheels start coming off. This is when Ryu and Matt started to struggle. Manoah is doing okay. Like, he was keeping runs off the board, but the peripherals were pretty scary. He was giving up a bunch of home runs. The whole, his velocity would also be quite inconsistent start to start, which actually would continue for much of the season. Which was, it was a little bit of a pullback on the, because he had arrived, he had that amazing debut, and then the next couple times out, he didn't always have the same velocity, and he had some home run problems, and the hit batters continued to be an issue. Yeah, I don't know. It's not like we were panicking about Manoah, but there was a little bit of a reality check on, like, okay, maybe this guy's not going to dominate the entire league from the get-go, which we needed. We needed that.
Yes, absolutely. I think the Stripling thing was fascinating, and it's... Sadly, it still gives me a little bit of hope for him, which is probably dumb on my part.
He's probably fine. I know the Blue Jays, there's a decent chance they get another pitcher, but I think if he's your fifth starter, that's not a nightmare. Like, there's a lot of teams who would be fine with Stripling as a fifth starter, as long as you also have some depth, which the Blue Jays do, especially if Pearson is anything. So then we go July, another similar month, 12 and 11, but this is a plus 34 run differential, and the things actually got better because some of those teams that were pushing in the wild card, like Oakland and Seattle, teams like that that were decent but not as good as they'd shown, pulled back a little bit. So they're actually only 3.5 games out of the wild card, even though they had a mediocre month. July is all about trades. Like, you get early in the month, you got Trevor Richards, this is through 2024, and Bowden Francis, who's just kind of a, you know, he could be a bullpen guy at some point. He's a depth arm, really, for Rowdy Tellez, which, I don't know. It's interesting because there's quite a lot of hope for Tellez coming to season. Like, he had shown so well in 2020. The lineup lacked left-handed bats. You know, I think the reality is that with Vladdy moving to first base, they just weren't going to, unless Tellez was, like, awesome, unless he was, like, incredible, like, cannot keep his bat out of the lineup, over the long term, you're just not going to keep him and Vladdy on the same team. Like, it would have taken a really, you know, just a higher level than Tellez is capable of over a long period of time. Now, to be fair,
like a Freddie Freeman, perhaps.
Yeah, like a Freddie Freeman type. Yeah, I mean, Tellez actually was incredible when he arrived in Milwaukee for a little stretch, which caused some consternation for Blue Jays fans. But, you know, I think Tellez is a complimentary player. He's a, you know, a part-time starter, platoon guy, bench bat, pinch hitter type. And Trevor Richards is a complimentary player. He's a not quite back of the rotation, a little bit of extra length, but can miss some bats, good changeup. Like, in the end, I think it's kind of a fair trade. Like, both teams got a player that fits what they're trying to do and what they needed better, and I don't think anyone hosed anyone. And I, like, personally, having dealt with Rowdy Tellez when I was, you know, on the Blue Jays beat, like, he's someone I always enjoyed dealing with. Like, he's actually a very, very funny guy. He has a very sarcastic sense of humor, which doesn't really necessarily come through in kind of the general media availability. So, you know, I understand he was a favorite for a lot of people, and I think he's a fan favorite, but yeah, it just seemed like kind of a reasonable trade on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, and the Jays were just, you know, desperate at the time for bullpen help. I mean, yeah, like you said in the talking about the previous one, you know, the wheels just fell off so hard on Chatwood. I mean, Rafael Dolis was hurt and terrible and hurt, and you know, they just couldn't find anybody to bridge the gap to to Jordan Romano, basically. I mean, Tim Mazza sort of emerged at some point. I don't remember what the timeline was there, but yeah, they were just, and we see it in, you know, you mentioned the run differential in July. It was like every month had a positive run differential and a record like just barely above 500, or if not 500 itself, right? So, you know, they were burning games all the time because of that bullpen. And though Simber and Richards obviously weren't like massive, you know, transformational pieces, they were like huge because of, you know, the bar had been set so low.
Yeah, they needed some floor raisers, and both those guys raised the floor in a significant way. You know, and then the next trades, you know, there's a big one, right? The Berríos for Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson. That was a huge prospect outlay. Like, we'd never seen this front office do that before. I think there was, you know, we talked about it at the time, there's a little bit of shock just because the image of what a lot of people believed Austin Martin was. I don't think that image was actually particularly accurate. You know, this is a guy who was sort of supposed to dominate the minor leagues and be kind of almost MLB ready with the bat, and he came out in Double-A and he hit for basically no power. He had big OBPs, but those OBPs were juiced by getting plonked all the time. Now I don't know how, maybe the guy's Brandon Guyer, I don't know how repeatable it is, maybe that's always going to be part of his game. But you know, that's not, when you're talking about top prospects, you don't want that to be sort of like a key tool that they're counting on. He had some,
will only break his hand once a year. Yeah.
Yeah. He's had problems defensively. Not really looking like a shortstop, et cetera, et cetera. Now, none of this is to say that he's a bad prospect. Like, he still clearly, he can spray the ball. He can make good contact. The power is probably going to improve over time. It would shock nobody if he's an MLB regular and there's a world where he becomes an all-star. But I think a lot of Blue Jays fans had this impression of like, oh, this is the next guy that gets added to the core, and it's going to be Vladdy and Bo and Austin Martin, and he's right there in that mix. And he just hadn't shown himself to be that guy. And maybe he finds it with Minnesota, although his results with Minnesota after he went over to their Double-A team were very similar to what he did with Toronto. It's not like he went there and exploded. And Woods Richardson was a guy that I had very high hopes for coming into the season. And he was having a bit of a dicey year as well. He was one of those guys that, because he's not a huge power stuff guy, you need him to get results. Because if a guy who's more of a, I mean, pitchability is kind of a bad word sometimes with prospects, but more of a command, guile, variety of repertoire type of guy, there's not as much to project. And so you want to see him just kind of dominate and outthink minor league hitters. And he wasn't really doing that. Again, he could very much become a good MLB starter. That would shock nobody. He's still young. All of those caveats apply. But I think that when the Blue Jays fans saw this trade, the value they attached to the names involved was not in line with what their value kind of in the industry was based on what they were doing.
Yeah, I think that's not just true of Blue Jays fans, but I think of a lot of, you know, a lot of people who comment on the industry and are in the industry were, you know, if you tuned to MLB Network, you know, it would have been like, wow, look at what the Blue Jays gave up for Jose Berríos, which I think you're absolutely right, obviously. And you know, Berríos, especially after he made a little mechanical adjustment, tip your hat to Pete Walker again there, you know, showed why they, you know, as I'm sure we will talk about, they paid him a lot of money to be here for a long time, which feels real great. I don't know. I don't think that anybody has the regret. And it's also the regrets. Or I don't think anybody has regrets, but also I think that like the sticker shock thing was sort of complicated by the fact that like it's so easy and it's so common that like, oh, once the prospect gets traded out of town, oh, now he's a bust. You know, which is, you know, like you say, there's still lots of reason to have hope for Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson. I think that they're still very good prospects. But you definitely do see the warts a lot more clearly, when you don't have to like hang that hope on a guy. And I think that makes people sort of suspect of, you know, when that happens so quickly, when that shift happens so quickly, it's sort of easy to be like, okay, are we just kidding ourselves here and trying to make, you know, I think it doesn't lead to people, you know, assessing them as the value of those players as quote unquote pieces of a trade, in an accurate way, I guess. You know, I think it's very easy to be like, oh, you're just saying that because, you know, he's now out of town, and I still think that this is way too high a price to pay. And I think that was sort of the discourse for a long time until, you know, like you said, Martin continued to hit the same way with the Twins, and Berríos, you know, after a couple sort of wobbly starts, looked like the guy who's probably the ace of the Toronto Blue Jays for a long time.
Yeah, and there's, you know, like you said, those guys could go on to good careers. I understand why the Twins did what they did, you know, in terms of their own competitive cycle. I also think they kind of bought the dip on a couple of guys. Like, they probably thought, okay, these guys aren't having the 2021 seasons that we would have assumed, but we still believe in the foundation, and both those guys have a lot of good qualities. And I'm not trying to position like, oh, those guys are bust, but it is a lot of people, and a lot of people read all their prospect stuff in the off season, because that's when it comes out, because that's when things aren't happening. And then they don't follow kind of what's going on with the prospects, of course. And I'm guilty of that as well, 100%, because you get tied up in what's going on with the major league team.
And sometimes that's all that's out there.
Yeah. But I do think that there was a little bit of a misunderstanding about what that trade was. And also the fact that Berríos had the 2022 year of team control was huge, because not only did that mean that, like, this wasn't going to be a bust if they didn't make the playoffs, which they ultimately didn't, it also gave them a platform on which to build this extension that they later did with him, in a way that would have been much harder if he had been a free agent. The other trades, Riley Adams for Brad Hand, you know, arguably cost them the playoffs. But you can say that about so many things when there's only one game between them and the playoffs. But getting Brad Hand was disastrous. Getting Joaquin Soria for two players to be named later who ended up being minor prospects was not disastrous. It was irrelevant because he didn't really pitch. Other stuff in July, Springer. This was sort of the Springer month. He was at the height of his powers. He was healthy. He was their best player a lot of the time. Guys lower in the lineup, you know, Grichuk, this is him totally falling off. Biggio, Gurriel Jr. It felt like the top of the lineup guys were really good, and there were some holes down low at this point. Pitching, Ryu was doing well. Ray had a sub-2 ERA. Simber looks good. I forgot that Manoah went on the IL for slipping on the dugout steps. I didn't remember it was one of those kind of goofy injuries. Romano had a rough month, and this is also kind of during the sticky stuff discourse being at its height. That was sort of June, July. I think there was a lot of Romano panic at this point, which didn't end up coming to fruition.
He did sort of have to change what he did a little bit, though, I would say.
Oh, yeah, that's the wrong... Yeah, right. He had to change his approach for sure, but he ended up being effective nonetheless, which... is not hard to do sometimes when you throw like 100 miles an hour. Just do that. August, 16 and 14. So this is sort of the letdown month, right? Like, they've done all of this to make the team better. They've added Berríos. They've made the bullpen better. This is when the team is sort of supposed to take off. And they did when
they came back to Toronto, right? Yeah. I forget what the actual date was, but it was right at the end of July.
Yeah, and they had that, and they had a great series against the Red Sox, and early July, everything.
The whole homestand was great, yeah.
And then what you get, you know, Ray is incredible, sub-2 ERA and FIP in 41 innings, which is a hell of a workload for a month. For the record, 1-0 on wins. Wins are dumb. This is a good place to just put that.
41 innings with a 176 ERA, and he went 1-0.
Yep. Matt's had a weird month where he had a 130 ERA, but didn't strike anyone out. It was odd. Berríos was Berríos. Manoah was Manoah. Ryu had a bad ERA, but his peripherals were okay. So you get this incredible rotation performance. 326 ERA, 299 FIP, and 168 innings. The bullpen wasn't that bad either. Like, they were a sub-4 ERA, not what you wanted to see, but they weren't that disaster that they had been prior, other than Brad Hand. who I described in my notes as an abomination, apparently. 8.22 ERA, 8.13 FIP, and 10 appearances. A lot of high leverage stuff too. Like that, the runs he gave up were runs that mattered. Even so, like you get this really great pitching performance, and you just kind of assume, okay, well, when you've got that pitching performance, and you've got this offense, you're gonna have great results. And what happened was, the offense was below average for the first month. Vladdy hits his big slump. Bichette, and also big slump is a 110 WRC plus, so that's better than league average. Bichette was brutal, and when Bichette, we've talked to us before, but when Bichette is cold, it is really ugly to watch because
very noticeable.
His approach is very chaotic at the best of times, and when it's chaotic and ineffective, it is not fun. So yeah, Bichette and Vladdy are not doing great. Springer is injured. And we touched on this before, but this felt like the height of the Fire Charlie era. Like, you've got the team, and it's not going well. It's funny, like, we in the NHL, we talk about coaches often, how we talk about coaches' performance being basically how well their goalies are doing. Like, coaches who have great goalies end up getting a lot of credit. I think in baseball, it can go that way with hitters a lot of the time because there's not that much a manager can do about hitters. Like, you can do lineup matching to certain pitchers. You can move guys up and down, I guess. But really, you've kind of, most teams have a handful of good hitters. And if those good hitters aren't hitting, you're kind of out of luck and you're going to lose a bunch of games. And it feels like that was sort of what was happening with Montoyo in August.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, and as much as people would have liked to him to have recognized, you know, the disaster that was unfolding in Brad Hand's season, maybe a little sooner, you know, the guys at the top, his bosses, brought that guy in and was like, here's a guy that you need to use in high leverage situations. And I think we sometimes forget about that sort of stuff too. But yeah, it definitely, I mean, hitting wise, it definitely, you know, as much as Hand was real bad, real, real bad, right? Just right from the start and just an unfortunate thing all around. And one of those guys we sort of talked about off the top about like a reclamation project that is sort of an old, you know, an older Blue Jays move or, you know, one from an era that already feels in the past. Whereas, you know, now it's like, okay, you can't put your season on the line in the hands of Brad Hand, who you think is going to be better than he is. It's like, no, now they're sort of in a spot where, you know, were the situation the same in 2022, it's like, no, you got to empty some prospects out of your system and get somebody to, you know, make sure that this is, you know, the back of the bullpen is locked down, because you only have so many opportunities to piss away, which they unfortunately sort of did this year with their great opportunity. But yeah, this was the month of, like you say, Springer got hurt again. That was that West Coast road trip where he crashed into the wall. And you know, everything just sort of unraveled from there, I think.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was a rough month, and it just, there had been this assumption, right? They're coming home. They've made these trades. Now this is it, and they're gonna go. And I think, you know, I think we believe that. I think a lot of people believe that it was,
well, especially after they did for the, you know, the first part of the month on that homestand, yeah.
And then in September it all happens, right? Like, they're 19-9 with a plus 48 run differential. The pitching actually wasn't great. So 4.30 ERA, 4.67 FIP for the whole team, but they just mashed. Like, the whole team just mashed. Like, Vladdy was fully back. Bichette, Hernandez, Gurriel Jr. really came on at the end of the year. Semien was there. So for the month, they hit 128 WRC plus with a 512 slugging. To put that in perspective, the most similar MLB player this year to that is JD Martinez. So the entire team was 9 JD Martinez's every night for a month. And that's a good way to win more than twice as many games as you lose, which is exactly what happened. You can see how good the rotation could be, even though it was more the previous month when they'd been that great, but it had coalesced. Pearson and Merriweather were back. You know, neither of them really hit the ground running as you might have expected, but it felt better. It felt like the bullpen had some ammunition. Like, the Brad Hands of the world obviously ended up leaving, But you, those situations where you feel like you don't, you only have one guy you could possibly go to, it felt like they were fewer and farther between.
For sure. Yeah.
And then you hit October, Blue Jays go 3-0, sweep the Orioles. They were unbeaten in October. Normally that's a good thing. It's really that final day, right? It's the Nationals had a 4-run lead with 4 innings left. Couldn't do it. Couldn't hold that lead. Now, they've had a notoriously bad bullpen for years now. I believe Patrick Murphy was part of that, failure to hold the lead. And then the Rays couldn't score for a run in 9 innings. Like, they'd been an incredible offense all season long, especially after getting Nelson Cruz. And they just couldn't put one on the Yankees. And so the Blue Jays missed out. That was a rough day. I mean,
when the Rays did not beat the Yankees and couldn't manage to beat the Yankees, I was at a bar somewhere and we were watching it on, it's not a baseball town per se here in Peterborough. So it was like one game at a time. And so we were kind of keeping I had my phone on with the Nationals Red Sox game, and we had on the TV, the Yankees and Rays. And man, when the stupid fucking Rays could not score a goddamn run, I just knew it. You could talk to my friends about how bitter I was. Just like the Nationals, I'm not putting my faith in the Nationals. They are going to fuck this up. I know they're going to fuck this up. And of course they did, because they were fucking trash, especially at that point in the season after they just traded everybody with an ounce of talent not named Juan Soto on their entire team.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about how Mike Trout being what Mike Trout's been and the Angels still sucking, and then you can apply that to Ohtani last year. It's sort of the perfect indication that one player can't swing a baseball team. A better indication is what Juan Soto did at the end of 2021 when he was in nothing short of incredible, and it made no difference whatsoever because the Nationals were truly trash. So then the Blue Jays, fans get to watch, you know, Billy McKinney and Rowdy Tellez do stuff in the playoffs and get to feel all conflicted about the Atlanta Braves, which was a lot of fun, about how the Braves had won fewer games than the Blue Jays and had won the World Series. And, you know, I don't know, we're 2 years into the whole COVID-19 business. So if you still think that life is fair, I appreciate your ability to do that. But you know, life's not fair. The system not to say that things in MLB can never change and they can't think of a better system, but if anything, it's going the other way, because they're going to expand the playoffs and more not very good teams are going to make the playoffs. And then you're going to have even, like, if you were mad about the Atlanta Braves World Series, at some point in the future, you're going to be more mad about somebody else, because it's only going that way in the future.
True. And then October, I guess, also what we had, Robbie Ray got a Cy Young.
Yeah, we had the awards.
Vlad had the there were some poor unfortunate souls convinced that Ohtani shouldn't win the MVP and got very mad about that, which was fun for a couple days. Vlad had a great year, not to take anything away from him, obviously, but Ohtani was clearly the MVP. And then it was just it was over so quickly. That one dreadful day. Really sucked a lot of wind out of the fan base for obvious reasons.
Yeah, and I think, you know, luckily the off season, I mean, we'll see what happens again. But I think it's kind of encouraging, and I think people are going to be back with optimism in 2022, despite the losses of Ray and Semien, which happened in November. They brought in Kevin Gausman as a direct Ray replacement. I think it was a good move. You know, you get the draft pick capital working in the right direction, where you get both of the picks coming in. You sign them to a similar contract, a little bit more team friendly. And, you know, Gausman and Ray had pretty similar years in 2021. They're pretty similar pitchers in a lot of ways. Gausman doesn't have the same, let's call it, charisma or dramatic flair of watching Robbie Ray. Yeah, his pants are going to bore you. But his pitching won't. He's got a great splitter. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then getting Barrios too on this huge 7-year extension. He's the perfect guy to extend that length because of, you know, the durability, the consistency, And having two guys at the top of your rotation like that, and then having Alec Manoah around for a decent amount of time, like, that's a hell of a foundation to build on for your starting pitching. And then you've got...
And also, as if you recall, I mean, like, four of those months we talked about was like, yeah, Ryu was great.
Yeah.
He clearly fell off badly at the end, and that's a concern. But, man, I mean, if he looks more like the guy that he was before, and you know, in coming out of the gate in 2022, that's a ridiculous rotation.
Well, kind of what he was for the Dodgers was sort of their fourth starter in a rotation that had a lot of great pitchers, and that's what the Blue Jays want him to be for them. And there's no reason he can't be that in 2022 and perhaps beyond into 2023. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We come to the end of this year. I mean, December, nothing happened. So let's move past December. It's nothing. So kind of wrapping up our thoughts of the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays experience, there's so much to be optimistic about. I know that the season ended on this bitter, bitter note, but in terms of the level of spending they're willing to go to, unprecedented. The level of prospects they're willing to give up to win now. We saw that for the first time. We know that Vladdy's going to be the guy that we thought he could be. And I'm not saying, like, next year he might not be as good as he was in 2021, but we know that he's not going to be the guy we saw in 2019, 2020. We know what his potential is and that he's capable of reaching that potential. Whether he does that consistently, who's to say? But we know that. Bo Bichette, you know, I think there's probably too much certainty about him heading into 2021, but he did it over a full season. He did it. He locked it in. This is the guy Bichette can be. Hell, even Teoscar Hernandez, if people were still doubting him after his sort of late 2019 breakout and then 2020, you can lock him in as well. Like, there, not a lot went poorly for the Blue Jays in 2021 in terms of the outlook of this franchise. Like, the one thing you can kind of point to is Nate Pearson kind of going off rails a bit when he maybe coming to the year you saw him as a bigger part of the long-term picture. But hell, like, other than that, there's not a lot you look at and say this team is going in the wrong direction. Like, it's almost impossible to find data points that support that.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I mean, they clearly recognize, you know, Vlad's only going to be here for so long, or, you know, Vlad's only going to be relatively cheap for so long. And you gotta make good on that. And they're, you know, they've definitely been sort of pointing and moving in the right direction for quite some time. And it's all really lining up well with Vlad and Bo and Teoscar, you know, still is, you know, to a lesser extent and for a shorter time. You know, yeah, it's really something that they got here. And you know, I don't know if you mentioned Springer, who, you know, the health that he'll have over the rest of that contract is maybe a bit, you know, gives you a bit of pause. But man, such an incredible player when he is healthy and on the field, and a guy who, you know, we worry about the loss of production from Marcus Semien leaving. You know, I think they'll still bring in another guy. Ideally, Jose Ramirez, but you need Cleveland to want to do that to make that happen. But, you know, they'll bring in somebody to help with that. But also helping with it will be having Springer for, you know, more than just 82 games. And also helping with the rotation will be having Manoah and Berríos for full seasons. And, you know, going through that exercise that we just did, you know, there was a lot of starts that went to those Zoiks and the Rourkes and the Thorntons and openers and all sorts of guys who... you know, you'll have to see those because that's just the nature of pitching. But, you know, to have Berríos and Manoah there from day one is going to, you know, lead to a lot of good things for the Jays, I think, especially if Ryu is back to where, you know, he should be. And Gausman obviously will be a fine replacement for Robbie Ray, even though he may not, you know, be a Cy Young guy. He doesn't have to be, like you said. You know, one of their best months, the pitching wasn't great. But they mashed, and that was, you know, that's something that this team could do. It can weather a bad pitching month or a bad hitting month by the looks of, you know, how the roster is taking shape, and that just will put them in an excellent position to once again, you know, be right in the thick of it all the way to the end, and hopefully actually, you know, into October for more than just three damn games.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thanks, everyone, for sticking with us through, you know, the 8 months, I think. That's how the math works, of Blue Jays Happy Hour in 2021. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will be back Oh, well, you know, at some point when something happens, and hopefully something will happen at some point. So we'll see you then.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.